You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Hi, this is Leslie Frazier, and this is the NFL Players Second Acts Podcast.
Thank y'all for tuning in. I'm Peanut Tillman, and this is the NFL Player Second Acts Podcast. This is my guy, Roman Harper. We got a good one for y'all today.
You know, I think it's beautiful. Also, let me just get all the particulars out the way. Anywhere you listen to us, thank you. And if you watch, wherever it's at, wherever you pick up your podcast, Apple Podcasts, iHeart Radio Podcast, thank you as always. Give us a rating, a review, click follow, continue to tell a friend, to tell a friend, to tell a friend. And we want to pick this thing up. We got a great guest today. I'm very, very excited for who we have in the building today. I literally just want to start the interview because we're not going to spill it all before we ever record. So let's just cut the camera on. Let's go. Peanut, who we got here. As a matter of fact, I'm going to tell you who we got. We got Coach Leslie Frazier here today. I was just telling him how excited I am to talk to you because I didn't know your whole complete background. I only knew you as Coach Leslie Frazier.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't know the player who was and is inside Leslie Frazier. You can give him all the details, Peanut, with his resume. But it's just a real honor because the moment we start talking, I get immediately back into the DB room where
right?
I'm so comfortable.
Didn't you feel
like,
that?
Yes. Immediately I'm like, oh, this is like, I'm immediately excited because I can talk ball all day long. I
for
love
sure.
it.
Yeah.
It was my first love. And I immediately become passionate when I get around other DB guys immediately about it, especially when you play the position, you understand it so much more. So let's go and let's really just dive into it.
No, I don't even think I need to read his bio because makes no sense to read the bio. Yeah, let's just get right into it.
I want to pick up on what Roman just said. That familiarity when you're around defensive backs, that's like mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, you feel that symmetry, man. And I feel that, you know, when you came in and spoke to our guys in training camp, I think it was training camp, but maybe during the season, and talked to them about taking the football away. And you had some other good things to say as well, but that really resonated with me because as a coach, you want to take the ball away. But and then watching, you know, Roman throughout his career, having success both in Carolina and then in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have a chance to get some hardware as well. That makes a difference. And, you know, just being in the both of your company as a coach and then as a former player, you have a lot of respect for guys who know what it takes to have success on the field. Because a lot of times people think it's just all about being fast, being strong.
Yeah.
That's enough to allow you to be successful. But I know we're talking about students of the game when I'm talking to the both of you. Both guys spent time in the film room. Mm-hmm. Both guys took notes the people that they were playing against. Mm-hmm. And that's what gets me excited when I'm around other defensive backs, guys that understand from the neck up, that matters. It's not just how high I can jump or how fast I can run. And both of you guys exemplify that, man. You both understood it took more to be successful than just working out in the off season. I had to spend the time in the classroom. The walkthroughs mattered.
Oh man,
to both of you
love walkthroughs.
So I mean that encourages me both as a former player and as a coach as well.
Is it weird that I want you to coach me right now? Because I feel like I could play a game with that with that speech you just gave me. Like I feel like playing right now. We were talking to BA a minute ago, and I was like, I feel like I still got it. Now I really feel like I can still got it. Like I can go play a whole season right now. We ain't but like 2 weeks away from the season. Like I'm ready for it now. What you just told me, like let's go. I'm ready to try out for somebody.
I think it's so special as well. It's like, you know, Coach talked about you know, how much you helped them create turnovers and things like that. I'll never forget when Peanut showed up with as my teammate in Carolina, my second year there. And you look up and Steve Wilks is like, look, I don't know what it is, but when this guy Peanut shows up, he's going to start punching at the ball. But naturally, you just got to keep running. Just run to the ball. It's going to hit the ground. I don't know how he does it. It just starts to happen. Right. Not only that, but it's the same thing what you said. And Wilks told me too. He's like, but he does it. And then all of a sudden it becomes contagious.
That's right.
And everybody starts doing it. And you like, I didn't even know I should attempt to punch at the ball at times that I did until I got around him and you feel safety. Like, you know what? I should just try it. Yeah. Like it doesn't hurt at all. All of a sudden, it costs you nothing.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the ball's just out.
Yeah.
And it becomes this attitude. And now we're competing about it. And when you get competitive with really good competitive people,
You got something.
You got something really special there. And that is what you're talking about. And it's just really good when you get in those great rooms and you were in a great room as a player as well on the 85 Bears. Mm-hmm. Which I just didn't know you were the freaking starting corner for the best defense of all time until I do a deep dive in. Because, and a lot of times people don't remember you, and it's not because you didn't put up numbers. I mean, you put up great numbers. You had 20 picks in 5 years. Like, who's putting up those numbers, right? But it's more the fact of the injury that occurred. Mm. Your career was cut short in the biggest game. And now when you win it, we just cut the TV off. We're happy as Chicago Bear fans.
Right.
We don't actually think about the dead bodies that we left out there. Mm-hmm. Not calling you a dead body, but this is what happens. And this is what life is. Can you kind of walk us through that? The play call, like how did it happen? Cause it didn't even count. It was a flag.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, you know, one of those tough moments. We try to a trick play. And I know Peanut having played in Chicago is very familiar with that team and the success of our team. We tried a trick play, a reverse punt. Now, Roman, this is a play, Peanut, that we practice all year long.
Yeah.
We practice it all the time. And I was a guy receiving it. I had returned punts in college. But we went like 19 weeks, man, and we never called. And I used to tell our special teams coach, I used to say during the season when we practice it, if y'all ever call that play, I'm going to score on it.
Yeah.
Then it came in the Super Bowl. I was like, man, I can't believe they call it now. We're in the Super Bowl. The whole season is going by and they call it. So I said, okay, here we go. And our punt returner catches the ball. And then, you know, I'm one of the guys that's out holding up. And now I reverse back around and come and get the handoff. And we were playing down in New Orleans, playing New England. And ended up planting my foot in that turf at the Superdome. And end up tearing my ACL up. And back then, you know, the surgeries weren't what they are today.
Not even close.
That was a career-ending injury. But in my mind, I was thinking, you know, I'm going to be one of those guys who comes back. I'm going to do something that people haven't been doing with this injury. I'm gonna make it back and have a testimony behind it. And so I go through like 18 months of rehab, man, working my tail off to get back. And so I missed a season, and then I come to training camp to see where I am from a physical standpoint. And they tell me that they don't want me to start yet after we take the physical. You know, continue to rehab your knee, work on your knee, and then we'll put you on PUP, and then we'll get you back out there. Well, a few days later, our head coach, Mike Ditka, calls me in. He asked me to stop by his dorm room. We're up in Plattsville, Wisconsin. You didn't get a chance to practice up there, but
I was
good
in
place.
Bourbonnais, I've heard about it.
Yeah, a lot of good
I would probably say
there.
Lucky you.
Yeah, lucky. Exactly right.
That's when training camp was real.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 2 days, the whole 9 yards.
Yeah.
So I come to Coach Ditka's dorm room. And in this room, man, there is our owner, Mike McCaskey.
Mike McCaskey, yeah.
Our general manager at the time, a guy named Jerry Venisi, our team doctor, our head trainer, our director of personnel. And I say to myself, I said, man, all these guys in here to welcome me back. This is pretty cool, you know?
Oh, wow. Well, that was your first thought.
That's my first thought. I really believe that. Nothing else went through my mind.
Yeah.
They're just going to sit down and talk to me about my knee and where we are and what our plan is going forward. And they told me that I hadn't passed the physical. And they thought it was too risky for me to go back on that field. And I knew I hadn't gotten my range of motion back. I knew that in my mind. But I wasn't really ready to accept that. I wanted to be able to get back out and just try it.
Yeah.
And you guys know, if you can't sprint in the secondary, it's going to be hard to do your job.
Right.
But mentally, you know, you don't want to accept the fact that you can't pass a physical. You've been taking physicals since you were a little kid.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden you can't pass a physical. So I told him, I said, you know what? Why don't you guys put together a waiver, and I'll sign a waiver. I just want to be able to go out there and practice and see if I can do it. And they said, no, you'd be at risk. We're not going to take that risk. And that was pretty much it. You know, got in my car and took that drive from Plattsville back to my home in Chicago. And all these thoughts are going through my mind. I'm only about 26 years of age at that time. And just came off the third consecutive season of leading the team in interceptions.
Yeah. So, put up big numbers. Up great numbers.
Yeah. So, not the news I wanted to hear, not the way I wanted my career to end. So, in my mind, I'm thinking that, you know, I'm going to work as hard as I can and maybe come back and play again. But that was a lot of self reflection on that drive back to my home in Chicago. But little did I know, God had a different plan.
Yeah.
Right.
And that second act that we're going to be talking about, it's worked out really well.
How did that injury, and we can just get into it right now, like that injury kind of changed the trajectory of your life. Like let's talk about this. So you're in your car. Back it up. They tell you, you know, we're not going to sign you. Your range of motion, you're injured. We got to let you go. And then that entire drive back, like, what's racing through your head? You're only 26 year old. Do you think, well, I'm still trying to come back, or man, maybe I need to get a job. Maybe I'll be a coach. Maybe I'll go back to school. Maybe I'll be a whatever. You know, like what was running through your mind, you know, once they told you that? Because I know for me, the my last day in an NFL building, or at least the Bears, when I finally got your cut. I walked in there, it's the general manager, it's the head coach, and I'm like, oh, okay, I think I know what time it is. I think they're finna tell. And then Charles Stillman, you've been a great Bear. And then that was all I heard. And then from that point on, it was just wah 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 wah. And I'm sitting there looking at Fox. It was John Fox. And he cut me. He was just like, yeah, we're not gonna renew your contract. And I was just like, and once he said that, I didn't hear, he might have given me straight compliments, but after that I was just like, well, I was like, damn, this is what it feels like to get cut. Man, this feels weird. I've never been cut before. What am I going to do? I guess I'll just go to my locker and clean my locker out. I got to get the kids. Yeah, this is awful right now. This is what they feel like in training camp when I watch Hard Knocks, when the coaches cut. Like, I had all these thoughts running through my head. And then I was just like, all right, huh? Oh, yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it. And then I walked out like, explain that, like, so they let you go and you get in this car, like, explain that, and then how that specific injury changed the trajectory of your life.
Well, all those thoughts that you mentioned, you know, what's next, I mean, all those things are going through your mind. And that's exactly what was happening to me as I was driving. I think it may be in a 2-hour drive. So I'm just reflecting, man, and this is pre-cell phone, so it's not like you're going to get on the cell phone and talk to someone.
There's no release. This is all self.
Yes, in your mind, you're thinking about it. And so I get home and, you know, talk to my wife. Of course, she's heard the news. It's big news.
Right. Yeah.
And we talk and we do some praying together. And I immediately begin to think about getting back on the field. I wanted to get back on the field. I didn't want my career to end that way.
Yeah.
Especially when you're that young and have had the success that I was having.
I think it's crazy. I did not know you put up those numbers.
Yeah. Like, so and
baller.
And this is the other part of it. When I was injured, I was in the final year of my contract.
Mm. Oh.
So man, I was like,
Double whammy. Like, yeah, I'm about to get my money. I'm about to go get it.
Oh, yeah, exactly right.
Go get it.
You know the thought, man. And so when that injury came, I was like, man. But I think the Bears organization, the McCaskies, and Mrs. Hallis, who you're mm-hmm. very familiar with, Miss McCaskey, they were so good to me post-career. You know, even when I got back home, like I was telling this story, when I was inducted into the Black College Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. George McCaskey flew down after leaving Mrs. Hunt's funeral in Kansas City, flew to Atlanta the same day to be at that ceremony.
Oh, I didn't know.
And I told this story, man, about his parents. When I was going through my rehab, his mom and dad called me and my wife up, took us out to dinner,
mm-hmm.
just to talk, just to hang out. I mean, how many owners do that, you know?
Yeah,
not many.
Because, you know, I'm in the dumps being injured and, you know, can't be on the field. And they just wanted to cheer me and my wife up. So I'm forever grateful to that family and for what they meant to me during that period of my life. But that injury definitely changed the trajectory of my life, of my career, my life as well, because in my mind, I was going to go on and have a sustainable NFL career and then retire and go into whatever after that. But when things got cut short, now you got to fast forward, you know.
Yeah.
I wanted to play. I wanted to get back on the field again. So that fall, that when I got home in August, I got a letter in the mail from the president of a small school in the suburbs of Chicago, in Deerfield,
mm-hmm.
Trinity College. They were starting a football program from scratch.
Okay, so, because I'm glad you bring this up, because I had to know when I was done. I'm like, hold on. It's an NAIA school.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know exactly where it was. I looked it up. It didn't show me the direction.
I drive by it all the time.
It is like, but Trinity International.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how does he go from playing to like the head coach?
Yeah.
Like he was an assistant. His first job as coaching was the head coach.
Right.
What was that like going to like, no, I'm at the top of the food chain, yeah. running a program
yeah.
and going from player where it's like, I can still show you guys how to do it a little bit because mm-hmm. I'm young and fresh, but I really don't know what I'm all the way doing.
Oh yeah. That you're right on about that. I sure didn't know what I was doing. Learning on the run.
Yeah. I was wondering like how
sink or swim.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But for me, it wasn't an aspiration to be a coach. That wasn't something I desired. You know, I'd look at Coach Dicker, I look at Buddy Ryan, our D coordinator, look at my coaches, and I go like, man, this is a thankless job. Those guys spend all these hours over here.
Yeah,
and,
yes.
You know, all they talk about is us, but they're the ones putting this plan together. We're going out and executing it.
And they all seem mad all the time.
Right,
never joy.
They
didn't seem happy at all.
Yeah. There's no life being a coach. So that was not in my mind to be a coach. And so what I did was, you know, I started exploring, just trying to figure out what I was going to do. And I went and visited some different businesses. I had gotten my degree in business administration. I went to visit some different companies in Chicago just to see if that's something I might want to do.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I was still working on my knee, still trying to get my range of motion back.
Yeah.
And my agent got through to Seattle, and Seattle wanted to bring me out to test my knee and give me a physical. So I flew to Seattle in the month of, I think it was January. So we go from August, and in between that time, that president at Trinity International University, it was Trinity College at the time, he had not given up on trying to get me to become interested mm-hmm. in coaching. Mm. And so he continued to call me, write me, have other people that he knew, that knew me, call me. And my wife said to me one day, she said, what would it hurt just to go over there and just listen to what he has to say? What would that hurt? And I said, okay, I'll do that. I'll just go and hear what he has to say. And so he described the job and what he wanted to get accomplished by starting football at Trinity. And he thought I was the perfect person for it. And I was like, man, coaching? I don't know. And so I recommended a friend of mine who was coaching at Purdue University at the time, who played linebacker for us. And I thought he'd be great for the job. And the president said to me, no, you're the right guy for the job. Now, this is in November. And I was like, I don't know. I got to go home and think about it. But all the things he said to me, they made sense. And in my mind, I was like, if my career was going to end the way it looked like it might end,
mm-hmm.
I felt like you know, God would have something that was unique for me to do. And this was unique.
Very.
You know, I'm 26 years of age, a black man at a predominantly white school. Mm-hmm. They're asking me to be the head coach to start the program with no previous experience other than playing. I'm saying this is unique. And but I still wasn't ready to say yes.
Yeah.
So,
I still wanted to play.
I still wanted to play.
Yeah.
It was in my heart. I wanted to play. And so I kept working on my knee. And then I flew out to Seattle in January. And I passed the medical, but in my mind, I knew I didn't have my range, you know, even though I passed that medical and they told me that they were going to come back or bring me back and do the, you know, backpedal drills, the plan and drive, all the things you do as a DB. Mm-hmm. That would be the next step. Well, I get on the plane, I'm flying back to Chicago, and on that plane, I'm just wrestling with what the president had talked to me about Trinity. I'm wrestling with going back to Seattle. And I said, you know, if I go back and turn this opportunity down, will I miss, you know, what I'm being called to do? That's what was going through my mind. So we land, the plane lands, and I get off the plane, I go to a payphone, I call my wife up and I tell her that I think I'm going to take this job at Trinity. And she was good with it. So I call my agent up. I tell him. He was not good with it. He was like, what are you doing? I think the GM at the time was a guy named Mike McCormick. They have this all set up for you. They're expecting you to come back there and work out. And I said, I think this is what I need to do. And he was going, what's the name of this school? Why would you be interested in doing this? Why would you? And so I knew he wasn't going to understand. It was clear that he wasn't going to understand. And I said, you know, I'll just talk to you later. And I called the president up and I told him I was going to take the job. And that March of 1988 started the journey and, you know, brings me to where I am today. So
I think
awesome.
I love that story.
That's awesome.
I also want to know, is it more the fact, do you think, looking back on it, when you're on that plane ride back from Seattle, was it like, okay, do I really, truly, am I ready to accept that I might not be ready to play football? Was it the fear of being told, you know what, you think you're good, you passed the physical, but you're not where you used to be? Is it that fear, our own ego as former players? Because we know what it takes. Like, we know what it's like when we're at the highest level. We've seen ourselves. We're our own worst critic. Was it that fear, or was it truly like, you know what, I think this is just an opportunity and God's telling me I need to do this?
That's pretty much what it came down to. Because if I had gotten my range in my own mind, I probably would have taken that Seattle route. But I knew when I was doing my workouts, I couldn't like burst, you know, I couldn't get the burst. Yeah. And you got to know, man, it's the same thing
that Sean Merriman said yesterday.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
The same exact thing. It's like, I just didn't have that first step, like that burst. Like I felt it.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, you know yourself.
And
you're like,
Well, even though the medical, I was fine physically, I knew in my heart. So I said, if I walk away from this, I really feel like I'm walking away from what God's calling me to do. To your point, and it's probably one of the best decisions I ever made in my life to go ahead and accept that opportunity. Now, it was challenging, you know, for sure, starting a program from scratch with no previous experience and all that. But
learned a lot on the fly.
Oh man, it was a great experience for me. 9 years, you know, being the head coach there, and early on, you know, we were the homecoming team for everybody. And, you know, we got that turnaround and won some conference championships. Had a guy to get drafted to the 49ers.
There it is.
So it was, you know, we were just very, very blessed there. And, you know, before I left, I mean, they named the field after me. So it was tremendous, man. And the president, Dr. Ken Meyer, was outstanding. And he was my biggest proponent, was in my corner throughout and just, you know, help me navigate those waters. And what I did was I called as many of my old coaches as I could and just asked questions, you know, how do you do this? How do you do that? And some things they had never had to do that I was doing. I mean, we had to come up with uniforms.
Scratch. Yeah. You build them from scratch. It's totally different.
Had to get money to build a weight room and all those things. You know, you're a fundraiser, you're a head coach. You're out there lining the fields, you know, you're hiring a staff. I mean, all these things.
Doing everything.
Everything. I mean, you're doing everything.
Everything from scratch.
You've never done it before. So, but it was good for me. because it's helped me throughout my coaching career. Some of those things I went through at Trinity, to be able to see things from a different perspective. Now it's different when you start off as the head coach.
Yeah.
And so when I got my first job as an assistant to someone else, that was a challenge because I was so used to
doing it your own way.
Right. Doing it your own way.
Right.
Yeah. What was, I want to know, what was that like? I mean, the first time you're working under somebody else.
Yeah.
And how did the coach's dynamic, I think, is always crazy. I saw it in Carolina all the time because Sean McDermott naturally is a defensive back coach, but he's a defensive coordinator.
Yeah, right.
And Steve Wilks is his defensive back room.
Yeah.
So it's like this dynamic is always, and it's like, I mean, I know it's your defense, but like, this is my room.
Right.
And it's like, and so how does that dynamic always have to play out in learning how to be a good teammate as a coach?
I had to learn that. I had to learn what servant leadership was.
Yes, yeah.
And
that's a great term.
Yeah. So
I was looking for that.
So when I went to the University of Illinois with Ron Turner, who was the head coach, who was a former Chicago Bear coach as well. And he asked me to come down and be the defensive back coach. And it's a story behind that as well. I was 39 years old at the, you know, being at Trinity for that period of time. When I started at Trinity, I didn't know if it would be lifelong.
Could have been.
Could have been. But I got to a point where I said, if I don't leave now, I don't know if I'll ever leave, because I had gotten really comfortable there. We had built the program up. We were a good program now, one of the better teams in NIA and football after winning some conference championships, being ranked as high as third in the nation. We'd done some good things. But in my heart, I was like, I think there's more. I think there's more I can do. Mm-hmm. And so when Ron called, I said, I'm gonna give it a shot. And I, as long as my wife was good with it, because I knew once I left Trinity, because I mean, that could be a job you could stay in for the rest of your life. Once you leave there and get on this wheel, this car wheel, it's a journey now. And I knew that from experience, just seeing friends of mine who were in coaching. And she was good with it. So I told Ron, we'll come down. And so in that first staff meeting, man, that I'm not running, I'm sitting there and I'm listening and watching. That was just awkward, you know, for me. It was just an awkward feeling. But I learned to accept my role and to support the head coach. That was what was most important, because that's what I needed when I was in that chair. And, you know, I needed to have that attitude and be that servant leader in that role. And I've always thought about that all throughout my times when I've been an assistant, the importance of being a good assistant coach and really helping that head coach to be the best that he can possibly be.
Yeah. So how has it been? This is your first offseason not coaching. I went to a game last year and I saw Rob Marinelli, one of the great defensive minds in the game, great defensive defensive line coach. And I went up to one of the suites and the play is going and he is literally, he's looking, you know, he's looking at the play. Ah, okay, okay. And then he come back. And he watched it like he watched the entire game like he was still.
Oh, he was in the booth.
He was in but he was in his suite. He was in Coach Eberflus's suite. Mm-hmm. But he watched the play would go and he leaned down. He leaned forward, put his hands on his knees. Okay, and they huddle up. Oh, they're back. Okay, and I was just like, "How you doing?" And he was like, "Oh,
still stressing. Still stressing."
He has no skin in the game, but he was like. It's tough. It's my first time that I'm not coaching, and he goes, I don't know. I don't know, but I just gotta give it time. It'll get better. But like when I say he was like locked in, even in the booth,
he
was like dialed all the way in. Yeah. So how has it been for you? Well, we haven't gotten there yet, but how do you think it'll be for you being, you know, you haven't coached? This is the first time you haven't coached in a really long time.
Really long time. 40 years. Yeah. So either playing or coaching. So I'm sure it's going to be challenging, probably similar to Rod. I hope not quite that extent, but I'm sure it's going to be similar. What has helped me is, you know, some of the things we're doing here at the NFL Network, you know, going out to training camps, doing the show in the studio a week ago with the preseason. That takes my mind to a different place. Yeah. So I see the game from a different perspective, and that's helped me. If I were just sitting around and trying to keep up with what's going on in the league, I'm sure I'd be like Rod. I'd be pulling my hair out, going crazy, you know. But I'm able to look at the game a little bit differently right now. Now, the regular season may be different. You know, we haven't gotten there yet. But for now, I can distance myself a little bit. You know, you do have friends you want to pull for in the league, but just a different perspective when you are on this side versus being right in it.
So. What's been the biggest adjustment being on this side in the media now, though, being an analyst? What's been the biggest adjustment for you?
Probably the biggest thing is when we're preparing for a team or teams and coaching, you're locked in on that opponent. As you guys know, you spend so many hours, man, on just getting to know that opponent.
For sure.
Whereas in the broadcast business, you've got to know the league, you know, you got to know rosters from this team to that team, you know, so it's totally different in that way. You don't lock in on that opponent and get to know them like, you know, yourself almost.
Right.
And so that's probably been the biggest adjustment, just getting to know the entire league, because at any moment you could be talking about Cleveland today. You're talking about Detroit tomorrow or within the same conversation. So learning those different rosters and being able to communicate what you know.
So a couple of years ago, I was at a basketball game and I happened to be it was a Jordan tournament. And so it was all the Jordan teams in college and basketball, and North Carolina was there. And the former coach, Roy Williams, who's been there for forever, he literally was like your guy, Rod Marinelli. He's on there, and I'm sitting by his wife. We're right there, and he's just like, he's like coaching, but he's not coaching.
Retired.
But in his mind, he can't turn it off.
Right? Yeah.
Right. How hard has it been? Because you probably never turn it off. You see things, you're like, oh, it's, and you're constantly coaching. How do you guys ever turn it off? It's almost in your DNA at this point. You've been doing it since you were 26 years old.
Oh, yeah.
And so you don't know any better. How is that manageable? And is your wife just used to it? And she just ignores it. Like when you're watching a game at home, you're not on the sidelines. Yeah. Like, how do you handle those moments? Because those are the moments when nobody's watching.
Right.
And I know you can't help yourself the most.
You're exactly right. It's just, it's hard to turn it off.
Yeah.
Because you see,
I don't think you can turn it off. I don't think any coach can turn it off.
Yeah. I don't think players.
My dad was a coach. I don't think they can turn it off at all.
You saw it.
He's the same right now. He calls me and he's like, I'm like, all right. You know, he's telling me about onside kicks.
Yeah.
Like how to block it up. I'm like, all right, dad. He just can't turn it off. Yeah. Somebody gave up one. He said, oh, this is just what you're supposed to do. And he's drawing it up on a paper. Yeah. So I want to know how you guys as coaches, how do you ever get to that? Or do you never get to it?
Yeah, I don't. I'm still in the early stages, but the guys I've talked to, they're more like your dad. They're more like, you know, want to talk ball all the time and see things in a ball game.
Yeah.
Call you up and talk about them. And that's okay. You know, everybody has their different ways. I think it's important to find a hobby, though. My son, who as a scout with the Ravens, he's been encouraging me to get into golf or something.
Something.
To give you a deflection from football. So I'm going to find that. I'm going to find a hobby and try to do that and not just be so single-minded like I was when I was coaching. Otherwise, man, how do you enjoy your time away? You know, you don't really get a time. You're so stressed. So I don't want to be like that.
Right.
And you talked about it because you'd like to be a head coach again at some point.
I would. Now, you know, you'd hope that would happen. I'm taking a different route, you know, stepping away like I have.
Yeah.
But I really felt in my mind, Roman, that if it was going to happen, this was the way it would happen. Things weren't working, no matter how much success we had in Buffalo to get in front of people and talk to them about jobs. So I said, you know, I'm getting to a point in my career where, you know, the sand is running out of the hourglass. And if I'm going to do this, this is the time to do it. And made a decision. And so I'm hoping that an owner, when this is all over with, when this season's over with, that I'll be able to get in front of an ownership group and talk to them about some opportunities.
Yeah. So Coach McCarthy stepped away for a year. Sean Payton, they stepped away for a year. Sean did a little bit of broadcast, got in the media and was able to talk to the Broncos ownership and landed him a gig a year later. So, man, I salute you and I hope that we speak that in existence and into fruition. And I'm rooting for you.
Appreciate it.
I'd love to come to your new team and whatever team it is and come talk to them about turnovers, because I know what kind of a defensive mind you are.
That whole thing go all the way around.
Hey, Rome.
And come back with Peanut. It's like, man, look at that. It's me.
It ain't me. It is not me.
It's me.
Hey, I'm tying him up on that offer, though.
Hey, I wish I could bring him with me. I wish the one thing I'm really sad about, though, is like, I wish, you know, I played for Lovie Smith, another great defensive mind, but I wish we would have been able to, like, you could have been our D coordinator, DB coach, or just something with our defense, because we had some, man, we had a good squad and we had some great coaches, and I knew you would have only blessed us even more with your defensive mind and what you got, the rod, and like, I wish I could have been a part, or you could have been, we could have linked up at some point in time and been a part of a defense. Like, it just would have been, I thought I was a good player, I could have been even a better player. No, you know what I'm saying? Player. Like, I wish we could have just, man, I wish I could have been blessed for you to be a part of what we was with.
Well, we don't know how this thing's going to end, but I will be calling both of you when the time comes, and we will utilize your talents in a different way.
I love that.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
You know, I just got a ball question. It is what it is. So, Coach, this is what I've heard about Leslie Frazier's defense. And this is my first time actually getting to talk to you. I got to ask.
Yeah.
And so I always wanted to know, when you guys did a lot of stacks or bunch formations, I had guys that came from your system and they said, Coach Leslie Frazier doesn't let us like in and out it. He wants them to know this is your guy. You go with him. And he didn't let him in and out. I'm like, it's so much easier just to do the in and out.
No banjos?
No banjos. It was no like banjos. A huge, because I'm a banjo guy. Love it. I'm a banjo guy. Love it to death. All right. He's like, no. And banjo means like me and you. So if me and him are working together, me and Peanut, and we're placing two guys, the first one goes out, I got him because I'm out. Mm-hmm. And you got the next one. If not, we're going to lock it. And my guy goes, wherever he goes, I got him. And you got your guy. Wherever he goes, we're not banjo. We're not working together. We're independent contractors. But when we banjo, everybody's together. Right. It just, to me, it just seems easier. It's flowy. Yeah. It just goes. Could you explain? Yes. This was a one big thing. I'm like, why doesn't he do that? Right. They're like, I don't know. It's Coach Frazier's thing.
I've evolved on that part of it.
In Buffalo, you evolved to that.
If you get a tight stack, it's just easier to be in and out.
Yeah.
Zebra, however way you want to call it. Yeah. So, but one thing that happens sometimes is when you are, as you guys know, when you're banjoing it, when you're playing in and out or zebra, whatever you call it.
We both got to see it the same.
Oh, man. Hey. Because otherwise, Coach Frazier's like,
what are we doing? What are we doing?
Next time, we locking it.
Yeah. I agree.
Locking it.
The first time you mess it up.
Miscommunication. It's over. Lock it. I got my man. You got your man.
It makes it cleaner. That's it. And that's exactly what they told me, too.
As long as we can execute it,
right. Fine. You're fine with it. Yeah. The minute you mess up, it's a wrap.
That's so funny.
No, not doing
that's
that
such
more.
A coach answer. He's like, I mean, was y'all man Joeing? What was that?
He spoke it. You know, these are DBs right here. And you know what? You guys, I believe, would be the same way, man. If you see them out there struggling with their communication, you're going to say, how can I simplify?
Yep, right.
Because at the end of the day, I don't want us to beat ourselves.
Yeah, right? I agree.
You know, if you better than me, hey, congratulations.
Yeah.
But for us to be making mental mistakes or busting stuff, no.
You got no chance.
No.
You got no chance.
No chance.
You got no chance in the back.
So we lost it.
I like that.
That's why I had to ask it. I had to. We started going to the ball and said, all right, this is what I've been hearing. I got to know.
Yeah.
And you're right. And I heard you evolved as you continue to progress. And this was like a big thing. And they said, like, he's like, because he knows exactly who messed it up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if we lock it, then we know.
This is one thing I learned from Buddy Ryan, who's our D coordinator in Chicago. He would do a good job, Peanut, of listening to the players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had his scheme, a renowned scheme, that 46 defense. But at the end of the day, Roman, if I came to him and I said, okay, I don't know if you guys are familiar with this name, Cliff Branch, fast guy, Hall of Famer.
Yep, from the Raiders.
Great player. Use him as an example. We were a big press team. So if I say to him, hey, buddy, because he's telling me you got to handle Cliff Branch. And I'm watching tape, man. I'm saying, man, I don't know if I can press him every down, man. This guy's like tough at the line. And if he gets a step,
he gone.
I ain't going to catch him. So I say to Buddy, I said, I don't want to press him all the time. I got to be able to be up and back and mix it up. Whatever you need to do, Leslie, if that's what you think you need to do to get the job done, get the job done. Man, you know what that does for a player?
Yeah.
When the coach listens to him?
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to be one of those coaches who wouldn't listen.
Yeah.
So when the guys were saying, hey, coach, this is better sometimes and this is why, I said, okay, that's fine. Let's try it. But just like Buddy told me,
if that's gonna
help you to do your job, that's all right. Now, if I don't get it done, then I got to go back and do it the way he wants it done.
Right. Yeah.
But he's trusting me based on what I've seen on tape and knowing my abilities as well, that he's trusting my judgment. So as a player, that empowers me, man, to make this work when you have a coach like that. And that was one of the beautiful things about playing for a guy like Buddy. As great as he was as a coordinator, he would listen to the players. Now, at some point, you know, he's going to say, you know, we got to do it this way for this reason. And then you have to accept it as a player.
What was it like? So I'm kind of, I've been around it, just living in Chicago, being a Chicago Bear. I've seen a lot of the 85 Bears and I've heard some stories, but the listeners and the YouTubers are watching this channel and show right now. Give us a couple of stories of what it was like playing with Walter Payton, Dan Hampton, Steve.
You guys
Hicks,
were before
Mongo.
You guys were so ahead of the curve. You guys had personality.
I mean, yeah.
You had, I mean, I never forget because Ron Rivera was like
Ron our Rivera two, was two, another one.
2015 team. He's like, you guys remind me so much of the 85 team.
Mm.
He's like, just the personality. He's like, you guys' biggest strength is being who you are.
Yeah.
Like, nobody else is caring. You guys are taking pictures on the sideline. He's like, that's your biggest strength.
Right.
He's like, being who you are. Be who you are.
I love you for who you are to me. That's what he used to always
say. And he was like, it reminded him so much of that team.
Yeah.
And he would always, it was very passionate. He loved that team because of that.
Yeah.
And you guys were so successful. And you guys were so ahead of the curve. Like Peanut said, just like give us some great stories of that team because you guys are one of the greatest of all time.
We haven't won a Super Bowl since 1985 and the people in Chicago still treat the 85 Bears like it happened last year.
Yeah,
I kid you not. Like it's like what Leroy Butler say, it's like living on scholarship. Like
all the
85
time.
Bears
all
still
the time.
Living on scholarship all the time. Like, man,
No, you're right, man. When you go back, when I do go back, whenever I can, you do feel like you're standing in time. You know, people haven't forgotten. And you know, I don't know, Peanut, you guys should have won one while you were playing.
Oh, my God.
Know?
Who are you telling? I hear from this clown all the time. He's always making fun of me for not winning one. He's throwing it in my face.
Right. But no, we had some great personalities, man, starting with our quarterback. I mean, you know, Jim McMahon was, he was incredible. And I think one of the things he did to endear himself to our players our head coach could be really hard on players if you weren't playing at a certain level. Mm-hmm. And Jim was one of those guys, man, who he didn't care. You know, he didn't care what this coach said or that coach said. And some guys, as you guys know, will shrink under pressure. But Jim, like, he kind of lifted all the pressure and said, put it on my back. And so the players loved him for that. And, you know, he'd say things to the coaches. I can't repeat some of the things he'd say, man. But you'd be like, man, he's talking to coaches like that. And you'd be like, that's good, because they deserve that, the way they're talking to us, you know?
Yeah, you're like, bump that guy.
So, yeah, but have a teammate like that, and then, you know, Walter being as great as he was, the ultimate prankster, you know, always pulling pranks. You know, we're in training camp, man, you're getting your rest, all of a sudden the fire alarm goes off, you're thinking, you know, something bad's happening, and there's Walter outside when you run outside laughing at everybody, because there's no fire alarm, there's no fire, it's just... You know, him pranking everybody, but just some great players. Now, you mentioned Steve McMichaels. You guys know that he just became a finalist.
Yeah,
for Hall of Fame, which is outstanding.
Yeah.
And he's battling
ALS.
Yes, which is hard, and was a great teammate. Having the D-line that we had, think about the D-line that we had compared to you guys. You guys had a good D-line, too.
Y'all got killers.
Hall of Famers. So, I played with some guys, Roman, that made me look really, really good.
Yeah,
And Steve was one of them. He was a great player, great person, and a big personality as well. Always walking around in the locker room, flexing his muscles.
Went to UT.
He was a different dude. I can't get into a lot of detail about the flexing, but he was always showing off his body to his teammates and to the world if the world wanted to see it. But he was just a great teammate. But we had guys all throughout, Singletary. I mean, just a lot of great players on that team.
You just naming all Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
I got to know another thing, talking about the team, that 85 Bears team. I had to look this up, too. It's like, now, the Super Bowl shuffle, right?
Super Bowl shuffle.
It was legendary. Mm-hmm. It was the first time anybody had their own thing. I mean, how did that come about? And you were part of the G squad, the G crew.
Right.
Like, what was the G crew, number one?
Yeah.
And how did this whole Super Bowl shuffle thing kind of pop off?
Yeah. So if you guys can imagine, man, you're in the middle of the season and you're on a run, you know, we're on this winning streak. And then one of our teammates, Willie Gault, comes to us with this idea about doing this video. And at the time, these music videos were really popular, MTV popularized. And so, you know, he's telling different guys about it, and he's enlisting guys to be a part of it. And, you know, I know for me, I was having thoughts about, do you really want to do this during the season? But to the point you guys were making earlier about the personalities on our team, the bravado that we had, I mean, we knew we were good. And we wanted to be able to let everybody else know that we were good.
Right.
But here we are, and I think maybe week 10 or week 11, where it really kind of comes together. And then we go down to Miami. I think we're 12-0 at the time. We lose to the Dolphins on Monday Night Football. And, of course, they've got this streak. And we're approaching trying to, you know, get this undefeated streak of theirs. And we lose the game. We get back to Chicago maybe 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And the video was set up for us to go and do it first thing that morning. And, you know, I'm thinking about, do you really want to do this? And I said, you know.
I heard this from Chico.
Yeah. I said.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I said, for me, I'm going to do it. I said I was going to do it. I'm going to commit to it. Now, some guys didn't get up.
Right. Yeah.
Come down there. And but I made a commitment. So I went down there and glad I did. But if you can just think back to what it would be like for both of you during the middle of the season to go down and shoot a video saying that you are the best team in the National Football League.
After losing.
And after losing. And then dare everybody else to tear it down or break it up. And, you know, we went on and won a Super Bowl. At halftime, when I'm on the sideline with my street clothes on after that injury, they're playing the Super Bowl shuffle in the dome.
Oh, wow.
Looking at this man going like, we haven't even won the game yet, but we were up big. And they're playing the Super Bowl. It was like being at home in Chicago in New Orleans. It was awesome. So
Bears fans, but, travel well.
They travel well. They travel well. Yeah.
So now that you're in, we'll flip back to the media side. Now that you're in media, you know, my guy Rome, he over here, he does SEC Network. We do our podcast. He's got a whole slew of jobs that he does via media. Rome, give him some tips. what do you think you can give him tip wise?
I think the two
coach him up, coach.
You know what? Let me just take advantage.
Coach him up.
Are you ready? I wish I had a pointer. I could let you
right.
Hit the rewind button three or four times. It's two things I'd always say. The biggest thing is you have to be able to do two things, and that is you have to be able to entertain and educate. And if you can do, you have to be able to do one of those great. And if you can do two, it's a home run. So always being able to educate, get your point across in the right amount of time without using too many words. Don't talk on three different topics. I would pick one topic and slam it home versus trying to hit them with three different things, because the average person can't maintain that much. They just can't. They just don't know ball enough the way we do. So simplifying in that way and be able to deliver to the average person. And like my mom always tell me is like, make sure that she can understand it. So when I say twins or, you know, jet motion, just explain what that is. They don't always know. Or RPO. She's like, what is that? I'm like, remember, I'm still watching. I'm like, all right, mom, I got you. So just those things, and everything else comes natural, because all you do, like, you're a ball guy. Like, don't ever forget that. Don't try and be who anybody else is. Just be the best version of Leslie Frazier. And obviously you have. It's worked out beautifully for you. Your whole life, the longevity of your career has been awesome. And getting to know you even more, I understand why you've been in the positions and the seats you've held, because you are a ball guy.
Yeah. That's good advice, man. I'm gonna take you up on that. And matter of fact, my next appearance, whenever that is, I'm gonna be calling you up for a critique.
I want to be able to get a critique
so I can just keep progressing and getting better and better.
Yeah,
these are great pointers.
What are some of the advice that you hear back? And it's really hard to get critiques in this business as well, because so often nobody wants to tell you anything bad. And we're in this space of football where I'm just a plus and minus guy. Like I love getting critiqued.
Yeah.
I love telling somebody tell me I did a terrible job, so I know what I can't do right.
That's the athlete in the stuff.
And then I love hearing the feedback. You know, okay, that was good, but like, I don't care about the goods. I care so much more out of the losses and the bads, because that's when you really see true growth, is uncomfortability and after losses.
Yeah.
You know, when you don't really change that much. You know, you have so many bad mistakes or mental mistakes after a win. And you just like, well, we won. Yeah. Like, it's easy. But if I didn't even have that many mistakes, I made one bad play after a loss. I'm like, it almost burns the whole building down.
Yeah, I think that's in our DNA as athletes. like you said, I mean, that's just, we want immediate feedback. You know, we don't want a coach sugarcoating it.
No.
And then all of a sudden, he's trying to take my reps down.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, man. You said I've been playing well.
Right.
Or you ain't even been saying anything to me. So... No, I want immediate feedback to be able to let me know what direction I'm going or how I'm going, and that's how you improve, just like you said. And so, for me, the feedback has been very positive up to this point. All the things you mentioned a moment ago about being able to entertain and educate, I've heard that a few times, that's going to be one of the keys to being successful in this business, and that's one of the reasons that I'm doing what I'm doing, is because of my background and being able to educate. But you said it a moment ago, can you talk in a language that the average fan can understand, but yet not dumb it down so much that, you know, the fans are saying, why would he say it that way? Or, you know, just being able to communicate on their level without saying jet motion or TRC, you know, whatever it may be.
And TRC is just over routes.
Yeah.
They call it transcontinental. Yes. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like a whole bunch of big highways over there with the top.
Three level routes.
Yeah. I just think it's so interesting when you're always talking ball. Have you taken time to like give yourself your own flowers? Like, have you had time to like smell the roses, take a breath of fresh air? You know, you went from playing, not having it in the way you do, to accepting a coaching job. And since then, you've only coached. And then now,
you take your first year off,
you go into a training camp or two, you're still sniffing at it. I still want to get back. But have you ever like taken a second, like, you know what, man, Leslie Frazier is very accomplished throughout it all. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be. It didn't end the way I thought it was going to end. But man, I look up and I'm like,
I was all right. I did pretty good. I was pretty dope at my job. Yeah. I did some good stuff.
Right. I think there'll be a time for reflection. I don't know if I'm there yet.
Okay. That's so many coaches. Yeah. They don't know how. They just don't know how. They just can't do it. They can't do it.
You know, with this new challenge, being in broadcasting, that's a different challenge. So that kind of keeps your mind on certain things.
And I agree.
One of the things I've done this off season is just get with some other coaches and we'll get on a Zoom and we'll just go through some ball and talk some ball. So, and then my daughter got married this summer as well. And that was a big deal, man. a big deal just to be one day you guys will get there. But to be able to be around my daughter and her fiance, doing this off season, which I wouldn't have been able to do if I were coaching. Yeah. Right. I was thinking about it the other day. So thankful that I could participate rather than just show up at the wedding and walk her down the aisle. But I was actually a participant in some of the things that they were doing leading up to the wedding. That is probably the most time that I spent with our daughter since she left home when she was 18 years old. And I'll never be able to say thank you enough for that time that I was able to spend this off season, which I wouldn't have been able to do, as I mentioned before, if I were coaching. So that alone has made me thankful for this time. So I'm just, but from a reflection standpoint, the time will come. I've got enough things going on right now. I don't know if this is the time, but I don't think we're there yet.
I respect that. So coach, great career coaching. Your Mount Rushmore, if you had four people to put on it of people that have influenced you, helped you, mentored you, just important people that have had a pivotal role in your life, who would those four people be?
Number one, my grandmother who raised me and my two younger brothers, that is, she would have to be on that Mount Rushmore. Major influence. What you see today is a product of my upbringing by her, and forever grateful to my grandmother. One of my coaches when I was young, a gentleman named Charles Brown, who as a young kid growing up without a father, he saw something in me. And, you know, from the time I was probably 7-8 years of age, he was mentoring me and helping me to grow as an athlete, and got me introduced to baseball. That was probably my first sport, and then introduced me to football and basketball, but it all came from him just encouraging me and keeping me from going down a different path.
Yeah.
Cause he turned me to sports, and you know, it helped change my life by being able to be in sports and then having success. So Mr. Brown, would definitely be one of those two people. And then, I would have to put my wife there with her support that she's given me. We've been married 41 years now, and
shout out to 41.
Yeah. And number 41 right here. Yeah. And
I like how you played that in there.
It was a layup. Yeah. I had to take the layup. Yeah.
But without her support, she was there doing those Trinity years. My injury.
She was the one telling you you should try this.
Yeah,
she was there the whole time.
It's amazing how they're always right with that.
Yeah,
I don't want to give them credit.
If we listen,
always right.
Yeah, if we would just listen.
If we would just listen.
Right.
Oh my goodness.
Right. But she would be there, and probably my one of my high school coaches, a guy named Robert Smith, who just was very supportive when I was in high school. And you guys know what it's like when you are a teenager and you're just trying to figure things out, man. And different people are pulling on you when you're a star athlete, trying to get you into some things. And he was one of those guys who kept me on that path, you know, just to just walk the right way. And he helped me when I was trying to figure out college, because no one in my family had ever graduated from college or gone to college. And I mean, he was talking to my grandmother about the process and what needed to be done. And he's been a supporter all the way through my high school years until now today. So those will probably be the people that I would put on that Mount Rushmore, those four.
Yeah. All right. Mine is a broadcast question. Have you got to that point where, you know, you can watch it, whether you know the coach or the defense that they're running, can you like tell them how it is and be a little bit more critical. I think that was one of the biggest things I had to get over the hump of early was, you know, I mean, if he crapped the bed, like, you got to call it what it is. Right. Like, he just blew it. Like, and so are you to that point where you're ready to be critical on people, especially teams or coaches that you may know? And are you ready to accept the repercussions? And like, if I'm just calling balls and strikes, are you really to call balls and strikes and ready for them to accept it and for you to receive whatever comes back?
I think that's part of the territory in this role.
Yeah, it is.
So, you know, I have to be ready to do that and accept the repercussions from it, as you mentioned. I haven't gotten to that point yet. Haven't been in a situation like that, but that time will come. And try to do the right thing when the time comes. I think there's a way to do it, but you need to be able to call it like you see it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, you're a fraud. So
yeah, I agree.
You don't want to do that. You don't want to cheat the fan.
Are there any broadcasters or analysts that you watch who you've been like, man, I really like what this guy's doing. Like, maybe I could try and emulate, or, you know, this is how I want to model my game after.
Well, this is probably the most that I've been able to watch other analysts, because ordinarily, you know, when I was coaching, even when I was playing, I didn't really want to keep up with what the media was saying.
Yeah, you can't let it affect you.
Yeah, yeah. I just wouldn't want to read stuff. I didn't want to watch, you know, other people and what they were doing and what they were saying. So this off season, I've had a chance to try to observe and just look at, you know, different people, not only here at the NFL Network, but other networks as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's any one person I've kind of hung on to. I've just tried to observe and listen and just see how different people do different things and just see what I could pull from that without losing my personality.
Yes.
The way I've looked at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know this past, I think you said this offseason, you got inducted to the Black College Football Hall of Fame. You went to Alcorn State. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that.
SWAC, baby. Shout out to the SWAC. My dad played at Alabama State. My mom graduated from Alabama State. I grew up watching the Alabama State Marching Hornets my whole life.
Wow.
I went to Alabama, but I grew up in the SWAC, baby. So I know all about
it.
Wow. Awesome. When I read that, I'm a SWAC fanatic.
Small world, man.
Yeah. Shout out.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. What was that experience like? Thanks for interrupting me.
My bad. I got excited. You bring up the SWAC, bro. You see, Coach Frazier didn't.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't bat an eye. He knows what it's like.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry.
How do you know I wouldn't go and do that?
Because
I know about moms and pops.
Like they told Dion, you ain't SWAC.
They did.
All due respect, Dion. I mean, you're good, bro. You're good. But that's what they told him.
Yeah. But no, it was a very
first
humbling
off, congratulations
experience.
Congratulations on that. That's awesome.
Thank you. But it was humbling. When you think of all the great players that have come from HBCUs, going back to Walter and, you know, just Robert Brazil,
Jackie Slater.
I mean, just so many great players. You know, Doug Williams and James Harris were there. Just to have your name mentioned with those other greats, it just humbles you, you know, and much respect for all those that came before me. And, you know, you feel like you've accomplished something, because now, I mean, these are the people that know how hard you worked and know what, some of the things that you sacrificed to be the player that you were, much like you guys. I mean, people don't know the sacrifices that went into your getting ready to play on game day.
Right.
You know, it's not just rolling out of the bed and going out there. So, the recognition by people that look like you means a whole lot to me, a great deal. And I'm forever grateful for that experience.
Now, Coach Frazier, they actually marked you down as a top 15 all-time player at Alcorn State. Mm. We all know who's number one. All right. There's no question. It's Steve.
Steve.
Yeah, yeah.
Steve McNair.
There's no question. This guy was, it was like, everybody was it. I mean, he was throwing up the hooks as a bro, and he wasn't even a bro at the time. So it was like, I mean, we let Steve McNair do everything when he was at Alcorn. And what does
that?
It mean?
Can I throw up the hooks? Why
no,
not? Steve did it.
Dude, you're not Steve McNair. Relax. Sorry. You know, like I said before, you ain't SWAC, right? You don't understand. So it was could you talk about your last thing is just like the experience of being at HBCU, what it was like playing at Alcorn State, when you played at the SWAC, like that was really the avenue for a lot of African-American players at the time, because they still weren't getting the love at the PWIs at the time, especially quarterbacks or other skill positions where you kind of like funneled you into being a corner or whatever. But could you talk about that special relationship that you'll probably always have being in that lane?
It's a good question. I'm glad you brought that up, because when I came out, it was right at around when things were beginning to change.
Yeah.
We hadn't gotten to obviously where we are today, but it was just starting to change. So I ended up going over to Ole Miss for a visit. I grew up like 15 minutes from Mississippi State. My first college game to view was at Mississippi State. When I went over to Ole Miss on a visit, my high school coach had played at Ole Miss, and he and Archie Manning had played together. And I was there, man, and I was like, man, something, I don't get it. You know, I just didn't. And at that time, if you were not a starter at some of those SEC schools, you weren't going to come in and be a backup. They weren't recruiting you as a black athlete to be a backup. It just wasn't that time.
Yeah.
You know, you were more than likely going to be a star player. It's just a different era. You know, things were just starting to change a little bit. And when one of my coaches took me to an Alcorn versus Mississippi Valley State game, and Alcorn was recruiting me.
Mississippi Valley. Shout out to Walter Payton.
To Jerry Rice and those guys. I mean, all of them. So when I go to the Alcorn Valley game, and your parents can attest to this, the atmosphere at those games.
It's different.
It's different.
Oh, it hits different. Thomas know about that at Howard. Yeah. Our producer went to Howard. It just hit different.
It does hit different.
The band.
That's what it is.
I mean, the battle of the bands, all that. I'm looking, man, the atmosphere. And then the way they treated me when I was there, they treated me like I was already a member of the team. And I went back home and I told my grandmother that's why I wanted to go to school. And nothing against, you know, some of the others, because I wasn't like recruited by 50 different schools. It's just a few schools in the local area. But just the environment and the atmosphere just was better for me.
Yeah.
You know, nothing against any other place. But in my mind, I needed to be where people kind of wrapped their arms around me. That's the kind of kid
love.
I was.
It was love. I tell the story all the time. I took my daughter to a college visit and we went to Howard and it wasn't, you know, I went out to shake hands and one of the deans at the professor, she was like, come here, baby. Welcome home. Welcome back to the Mega. Yeah. She just gave me this hug and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Thank you, auntie. Yeah.
So you know,
I like
you know.
This place.
Yes.
It literally felt like a different world. And I wanted to go to Howard so bad.
He really
I bought t-shirts and I was like, man, I might have to get another degree just to say I'm from, just to say I went to Howard.
Yeah.
Just because I went, I wanted to, that, but I didn't go there, but everyone I've talked to that has went to an HBCU, they say the love that you feel when you step on campus, it just hits different.
Yeah. And that's exactly what it was for me. And I said, man, this is where I need to be. This is the environment I need to be in. And, you know, you fast forward to 2023, would I see it in a different, who knows? But at that time in my life, this 1976, 1977, it was the right thing for me. And I'm forever grateful for my experience at Alcorn. It was everything I hoped for, man. Now, it was a challenge. We worked hard, just like we all do in football. And, you know, it's just the way it was. But all the things that came from that experience, having a chance to meet my wife there and to the friendships that I made that are life lasting. I got a call just yesterday. I played baseball and football at Alcorn and got a call just yesterday from one of my baseball teammates about a little bit of a reunion. And I missed all these things over the years. And
yeah. Cause you've been, yeah.
Yeah. Been, and every fall, you know, I've been away, but this fall, I get a chance to go back and witness a game in person, which is going to be awesome as well. But to be able to relive that experience a little bit. So forever grateful for my time there, you know, being able to get my degree while I was there, the relationships that were built, the strong bonds, man, that are lifelong.
Yeah.
Just thankful for that period.
What was your biggest baseball highlight in college? I got to know this. I
didn't know you played baseball either. Come on, Thomas, you dropped the ball on this one.
Yeah. But a buddy of mine who is with another team in Cincinnati.
What position did you play?
I played first base and outfield.
First base, outfield.
Okay.
Yep. We're playing, and you guys probably don't remember this name, we're playing Jackson State. They have a guy who ended up going to the majors named Orkan Board. Do you guys remember that name, Boston Red Sox? You're not baseball fans then. Anyway.
Thomas does.
Okay. Okay.
he's our baseball guy.
he was an excellent pitcher for the Red Sox. So we've got two out, bottom of the ninth or last inning. Got a man on second. We got to drive him home to win this game.
Mm-hmm.
Game winning hit against Orkan Board was a big deal. And to be able to get to first base and have everybody running on the field, high-fiving you,
walk
driving
off
in the game, win and run. I mean, that was a special time. No other highlights, but that one definitely
really
sticks in
out
my mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, we end up having a good relationship as I followed his career and Major League Baseball and then my career in pro football. And we're both being from Mississippi and playing in the SWAC, just you know, a good relationship between the two of us for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Man, that's so good. Coach, man, thank you so much, man, blessing us with your time.
Thank you.
Your energy, your wisdom, the words.
Wisdom.
Very, 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 very thankful, man. I'm sad I didn't get to play for you. We would have worked that banjo out. I promise you I would have communicated.
Yes.
I'm a communication guru.
That is
what allowed me to play so long, man. Peanut, thank you, man, as always. Keep bringing the energy, dog. Thank you guys for allowing me to be here. Anyways, for all of our listeners, viewers, continue to tune in as always. Like we always ask you and tell you, demand it. Give us a 5-star rating. Give us that review. Hit follow. Anywhere you pick up your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, podcast. Continue to tell a friend and tell a friend to tell a friend. We're going to continue to move on. We're going to continue to hit you with the best in what the NFL has to offer as far as the people we get to share these stories with, talking about the transition, the walks of life, the spirituality that we all get to share, man. This fellowship, it's like nothing else, man. I appreciate it. I'm thankful for it. And I'm going to continue to bring the juice because my man Peanut is bringing the juice.
So all day long.
Thank you, man.
All
appreciate
day long.
It as always. Peanut, please get us out of here the right way.
Hey, I'm Peanut. That's my guy, Rome. And this is Coach Frazier. Hey, thank y'all for tuning in. And this is the NFL Players Second Acts Podcast. And we out.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.